Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, and we've got a big show for you guys and girls this week. We're mainly going to focus on two topics, but it is going to be an interesting two topics, and joining me this week are my tag team partner, the man from Southern California himself. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Marcus. I was at the Lakers celebration, but I don't even have a joke for it, Marcus. I was up in the air. I was like, do I want to go violence with the celebration? Do I want to go light skin joke here? Do I want to go California's on fire joke here? And I didn't hit either shot. So I was like your man playoff Paul George on these streets. I put a shot up and it just hit off the backboard. But either way, be that as it may, Marcus Vandenberg is here with us this week. What's going on, brother?
What is up, Nathaniel? How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. You see, you know, I had to get clean shaven for those watching the video version. I had to get clean shaven. It's a fresh new start. We got a brand new coach in Atlanta, so I'm expecting good things from the Falcons. We either gonna go on a run here, Marcus, or we're gonna cancel our season because of the Rona. Either way, it's gonna save me from these painful Sundays.
And where did your coach go to college, Nate?
Oh, where did he go to college?
Hofstra University, baby.
Interesting. So we'll see if he can bring who are you, the Lions? Is that the Hofstra Lions?
The Hofstra Pride.
The Pride.
But they are Lions. The mascots are.
Yeah, that's our mascot.
But when Raheem Morris was there, they were the Flying Dutchman. And
that's right, yes. And then
that
was a little
became
too insensitive for the
PC,
for the Dutch.
Yes. For the Dutch, like myself, yes.
Yes. that's how you got into Hofstra, full scholarship.
It's on the last name.
Yes,
no,
favorite nations.
Yes.
Marcus is joining us. But as you can see, if you watch it on the video version, we have a third man here in the booth with us tonight. But whose side is he on, Marcus? Because we are welcoming back a friend of the program and host of the 2022 on the Kings of Sport Patreon. Another person who is probably celebrating the Lakers championship win. Ladies and gentlemen,
LeBron.
y'all give it up. Like Chris has been the opposite of J.R. Smith. Like J.R. Smith hasn't worn a shirt since the Lakers won. Chris hasn't taken that Lakers shirt off since the Lakers won the title. Chris from L.A., a.k.a. the Professor KME, is with us. What's going on, brother?
Man, chilling. I'm just waiting on Ice Cube to say Black America. And once that happens, I think I'll be good to go.
I mean, why wouldn't you want public policy, Marcus, written by the man that brought us the big three?
Do you want to start with Ice Cube?
You know, let's start with Ice Cube, because we're going to talk Lakers, we're going to talk politics this week, but let's talk about the man that is in the center of both. Big figure when it comes to LA sports, but also somebody who got a little political this week, Chris. That is, of course, O'Shea Jackson, a.k.a. the one and only Ice Cube.
Yeah, man. So where do you want to begin with this? Because I've been on an emotional roller coaster about Ice Cube really for a few months. It kind of came to a head yesterday, and then today I saw him on Roland Martin like just an hour ago, so I'm kind of sorting out
my feelings. Did you watch that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so I watched it too. All right, we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Start with his whole contract thing first. That's where it all started.
Right. So I think first of all, anybody that's willing to like get with smart people and write down some policy, I think that's a great thing. No matter where you're at, whatever your lot in life is, doing something like that is always a start. I think there were issues with his contract. Does it include women? Does it include LGBTQ people? Does it include the everything that Black people are? Because as has been said millions of times, we're not a monolith. And that was one of the prevailing thoughts going behind his contract. So I guess he introduced his contract to Joe Biden and Joe Biden's people and Donald Trump and Donald Trump's people. And Donald Trump's people got back to him, probably offered him a few platitudes and things of that nature. And Joe Biden's people didn't get back to him and told him he'd get back to him after the election. I thought originally he felt disrespected by it. When I was watching Roland Martin, he kind of said that he didn't necessarily feel disrespected by it, but he felt that if Donald Trump is reaching out, that he needs to extend his hand out as well. So, that's where we're at with Ice Cube.
Yeah. So it's a contract with Black America. And I think the tweets yesterday were a little misleading. And I think what upset me, or not upset me, what was eye-opening for me from the Roland Martin interview today was Roland asked him about how does he feel about getting played by the Trump campaign. And he did not seem to either A, see the issue, or B, care that he was sort of being played right as his puppet. So that's the part where I'm like, well, I mean, if you clearly aren't going to acknowledge that you're played by two people who claims he doesn't know, the two people in those tweets, then it feels like, all right, well, what is really your end game here, Mr. Cube?
Yes, and I feel like if this were any other president than Donald J. Trump, Q would have had a point here, right? In the sense that, okay, I'm going to put this platform up to both candidates, and, you know, the challenger is not responding right away. So let me talk to the incumbent. Let me talk to the man at the White House and at least get the conversation started. Like, I feel like if this were Bush, or if this were, you know, Daddy Bush, or if this were maybe Reagan, like Clinton, you know, Jimmy Carter, any of those presidents, yes, regardless of how you feel about their policies or whatever, you can make a case for what Cube is saying here. But not Donald J. Trump. Donald Trump is not here for the brothers. And any and every Black person that has come into the orbit of Donald Trump, whether you're talking about Herman Cain, RIP, or Omarosa, or, you know, Katrina Pearson, who is this communicator, I don't know what her official title is, liar in chief for Donald Trump, the sheriff David Clark, or Daniel Cameron in Kentucky, or Diamond and Silk, like all the Black people, Herschel Walker of all people, Poe Herschel, man. Like all the Black people, Andre Reed, Marcus's uncle, all the Black people in Trump's orbit are used as pawns and puppets. And so, like, for Cube, like, Ice Cube's not dumb. Like, we know Cube is not dumb. But this was certainly not a smart move to get in bed with the Trump campaign, even if your idea is, I just want to put these this platform out to the president and see what he say.
Yeah, I agree. I think my biggest problem with Ice Cube is it's my problem not just with him, but with a lot of celebrities of his ilk, where they have never been in or around the political arena ever. Mm-hmm. And when they get in, when they try to dip their toe in the politics, they've got nothing but crap to talk about Democrats never doing anything for anybody or anything and stuff like that. And I kind of I take that as an insult, because I've been working with Democrats for 20 years now. Next year, it'll be 20 years. I work on political campaigns. I'm a member of the NAACP. I'm a member of Black Lives Matter. I go to the meetings. I talk about policy. I talk about moving policy. Cube says he was a part of this as well, but we were a big part of Gavin Newsom starting to move certain policies on reparations. So it's a little bit insulting when, you know, nobody's paying attention to the incremental changes that are made. Mm-hmm. And when things are just magically not great when you want it, instant justice, right? Then you want to, you know, say, well, at least Donald Trump met with me. It's an ego boost to say, hey, the president met with me and stuff. But Donald Trump.
It doesn't
Trump
even sound like it was Trump. It just sounds like it was a representative. It wasn't, you know. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to the White House talking to Trump. He was talking to, you know, a handler.
And this is the thing about this. Donald Trump is a bad faith actor. Donald Trump is just a mess, man. I've noticed about with someone like LeBron James, who absolutely hates Donald Trump, can't stand Donald Trump. You can't watch an episode of the Shop without him going in on Donald Trump. Donald Trump never says anything that bad about LeBron James, because LeBron James is an A-lister and LeBron James is very good at his craft. Donald Trump hates LeBron James. And when I say that term hate, he hates LeBron James in the sense that LeBron James does not love him. And Donald Trump likes A-list people to love him. And LeBron James is not one of those kind of people. And to your point, Marcus, I don't know if Ice Cube would be, if Donald Trump considers Ice Cube that important. I think he thinks Ice Cube is important in the sense that, yeah, I'll send one of my little house Negroes to go meet up with you. But I don't think he feels Ice Cube is important enough for me, Donald Trump, to take time out of my day to meet this rapper who was popular in the 90s. Not saying that Ice Cube isn't popular now, because he is, but I mean, I just think that's how Donald Trump's mind works.
Yeah, and then the thing is, like, I feel like Ice Cube should have known better, because for Donald Trump, the only value to Ice Cube is that, you know, the same value that Kanye would have had, is that you can maybe siphon off some of the black vote. That's the only upside to a collaboration with Cube. But for Ice Cube, like, the downside, Marcus, and we're already seeing it, the downside is very apparent in terms of alienating your audience and alienating the people that have supported you for all these years.
Yeah, and, you know, granted, what Ice Cube did, probably, you know, not something I would do. But the people that are now calling him a coon and stuff, it's just like, come on, like, you take it one step too far. And I mean, this is Twitter in general. Like, if Ice Cube was in the same room as you, you would not call the man a coon. You'd probably, hey, Mr. O'Shea, can I have an autograph? Like, there would be a level of respect / fear that he would still present, you know, being in person. So I think we really just need to cool it with some of these terms that we toss out based on, really, it all started based on a tweet, not from Ice Cube, but from the Republican camp without any clarification or rebuttal from Ice Cube. And he did finally respond yesterday and laid out what exactly happened. But at that point, the damage had already been done from public perception. So, and that's something that, you know, I wish Cube would have said, look, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't happy about being played, because God forbid, what if Trump tweets out tomorrow, like, shout out to my homie Ice Cube. Like if Trump wanted to really like end his career for black people, he would mention him on Twitter. It'd be a wrap. Like, people don't take the time to actually listen and read and follow up, and he could just crush his career if he wanted to. So,
right. And it's crazy that so many people took like the tweets from the Republican camp, you know, again, whether it be somebody like a Katrina Pearson or whoever, like that they took those tweets as the 100% truth. When, Chris, if we've learned nothing from 2020, is that Republicans be lying, man. Like, yeah, that's what they do. Like, that's not everybody that's conservative is a liar, but these conservatives that are in office and in the Trump administration, that's what they do.
Right. And, you know, that was a carrot that they love to get, is Ice Cube being able to talk to him on the phone and things of that nature. Ice Cube, I don't believe in calling black people sellouts or coons or anything like that, because I do think that even those kind of black people, there's a part of them that think that they're acting in the overall interest of black people. So I'm not going to judge them on those merits. Ice Cube is not. After listening to him on Roland Martin, I didn't like any of the tweets he made yesterday. They all seem kind of just egotistical and just that, I didn't
that's
think,
a good word. It feels like it's all his ego driving this whole thing. Like he's using the shield of bipartisanship, but in reality, his ego of this contract is sort of fueling all of this. And if you could just step back and realize, like, this isn't about me, this isn't about my contract, this is something bigger, then I think we'd be in a better place.
Right, yeah, because the Ice Cube does that thing that a lot of people do, and that's that both sides-ism stuff that I absolutely hate. The problem that I have with Ice Cube, and I think the problem with that a lot of folks that were getting at him on Twitter have, is this is always the first step that both sides-ism is always the first or second step into MAGA-dom. It always starts the same way. It always starts with, not a fan of Donald Trump. It goes that. And then from there, it's like, well, Donald Trump did have a good point on this particular talking point. And then from there, it graduates to, well, I don't really like either party, but or Donald Trump or Biden, but if I was gonna vote, I'd probably vote for Biden, but I'm not gonna vote, so whatever. And then it goes to, well, Donald Trump is making the most sense when it comes to black people and this and that, the other thing. And Donald Trump, I might not like his rhetoric, but I like the way he talks and he speaks to me. And then all of a sudden, next day, you'll see
as I'll say, the government's shutting you down, Chris. Your mic's getting a little warbly there, brother.
it's the Wi-Fi, I think. try say something out, Chris.
Trump shut him down.
All right.
So while Chris is getting his technical issues straightened out, Marcus, what did you make of this? Because I feel like, in particular, the idea, like you said, the ego, because I feel like this is something where if Cube were playing his cards right, he would have just, you know, he wouldn't even reach that Trump. He just would have reached out to the Biden-Harris campaign. And if they came back and said, hey, dog, you know, we trying to get this election first. Let us get through this first, and then we can come back to the table. I feel like, you know, he should have been like, all right, cool, word, bet. You know, I'm going to, you know, hold this and bring this platform to you after the election, and then maybe we can get something started, because nothing is going to come from this with Trump besides a PR stunt. Whereas with Biden and Harris, like, you might not get everything you're looking for on the platform, but you could at least get some of what you're looking for, because they're more apt to work with you on that.
Yeah, I think the timing was bad. And I don't know when exactly he had these back and forths with the Trump administration, if it was this week or if it was something that had been a few weeks ago and the Trump camp decided to tweet about it now or what. But what I found funny yesterday was, while people were up in arms about what Cube did yesterday, I wish those same people had that same energy when Cube was tweeting out his anti-Semitic rhetoric over the summer, because
right,
you know, that happened, and you know, people were upset. Jewish people were rightly upset, but I did not see that same energy from our own people.
I don't know what happened over the summer, because like out of nowhere we had like this weird 2 or 3 weeks of Black people, Jewish people tension. Which, granted, like that's a tension that has always existed in America. But out of nowhere, like with the DeSean Jackson stuff and with Steven Jackson and then Ice Cube, like out of nowhere, we had this weird 2 or 3 weeks of Black people, Jewish people tension.
Well, in the middle of that was Farrakhan, who did a speech on, I think it was July 4th, but Cube's comments were, or Cube's
speech. Yes, of course, Farrakhan is the Michael Jordan of Black people, Jewish people tension.
Yes.
He the GOAT.
So that was, you know, a little eye-opening. Not surprising, just because, like you mentioned, this has been historically something that has been an ongoing back and forth. But, you know, I see y'all.
So speaking of, I see y'all. Chris is back. Let's see if the government. Oh, okay. Chris with that good Wi-Fi now after the government shut him down earlier.
That laptop is old and busted. I just had to turn my take it off the magic keyboard or whatever. But anyway, yeah. Ice Cube, and even over the summer, because what he was saying, he was on Roland Martin again talking about the anti-Jewish rhetoric and stuff like that. And he was saying, because I don't think he tweeted anything that came from him. All of his tweets were mainly retweets and stuff like that. And I don't think these celebrities understand that even the act of retweeting and liking bullshit on Twitter is still just as bad as if it's coming from yourself, right? And that was kind of his argument for the anti-Semitic stuff. Here's the thing with Ice Cube. If you want to get into the political arena, you need to talk to people who know more about this stuff than you. Ice Cube is a famous guy. He's a rich guy. Politicians will love him. I have a seat at the table, and I'm not rich at all. You know what I'm saying? But I still have a through line with Los Angeles Democrats. It's not that hard to do, especially if you already kind of work in that field. Ice Cube is not a genius. He's good at rapping. And I think that we need to understand that about these people, like that are these rappers and stuff. just because you're rich and a good businessman and you're good at rapping or acting or whatever, it does not mean that that translates into the political arena. Because even when I was watching him on Roland Martin today, he still has this entitlement about him where he thinks that Joe Biden or whatever, that he's just going to mosey his way onto the front of the line and not wait for anything. One of the wimp ladies on Roland Martin, she's going to kill me because I do see her sometimes. I actually retweeted her angry video yesterday, but she said that she doesn't like Ice Cube's Contract to Black America. She said it was very, very kind of asking for a lot of unconstitutional things. And I think that's kind of another thing you have to look at is the constitutionality of the things that you're asking for. You got to understand right now, too, this is not the time to be doing that shit because the Republicans are about to have a 6-3 advantage in the Supreme Court, something that I've been warning about since Donald Trump got in office. And it's finally going to happen unless, you know, the ghost of Christmas past, present and future visits two more of those Republicans. That woman is getting confirmed. You know, and Cube needs to understand that. And Cube is rich again. Cube doesn't have to be on Obamacare. He doesn't need the ACA. If he gets sick, he's got pockets deep enough to take care of what's wrong with him. When he's going on these shows, on these platforms, and saying this stupid shit, is he thinking about the people who Donald Trump is trying to take the ACA away from? Is he thinking about that? Is he thinking about mothers who need abortions because of their circumstances? Is he thinking about these kind of things? Or is he just thinking about Joe Biden didn't meet up with me, I'm upset, I'm butthurt, I want to cry, or I'm not going to vote? And black men got to be smarter about this, because black men are the only ones who have this sense of this transactional relationship with politics that makes no sense. Black women, when they meet with politicians, they have clear demands. And I'm not trying to do a man versus woman thing, but they have clear demands and they show why a politician should take them seriously. For example, Joe Biden picking a black VP, Angela Rye, Latasha Brown, and all those different women got together and they were like, look, we have this many registered women voting that are going to vote in the 2020 election. If you do not pick a black woman as your VP, there's a very good chance you will not win. And they show proof as to why Joe Biden won't win. Ice Cube is not doing anything of this sort. Neither Ice Cube, P. Diddy, none of these rappers, man. Stay in your lane or learn this shit, man. It's really that simple.
So what you're saying is, Chris, Cube was on the phone with Biden, and Joe and him was like, you know, we'll talk to you after the election, O'Shea. And Ice Cube was like, but when though? Is it going to be Friday? Maybe next Friday? Friday after next? I'm like, are we there yet, Buster? Are we there yet?
Oh, man.
That's a disrespectful thing to do. I've been given that kind of cold shoulder by politicians. Oh, we'll talk to you after the election. Oh, we'll talk to you when we get it. It's disrespectful, and I understand why.
So they hit you like Varnell Hill hit Martin on that one episode of Martin. Like, yeah, you can come on the show. Let me get back to you on that one.
Oh, dude, I've dealt with that so many times from politicians. It just bounces off of you. But what I've learned is that me by myself is not enough when it comes to politics. That's why I had to join the NAACP. That's why I'm a part of Black Lives Matter. That's why I'm working for the Lincoln Project right now. That's why I work deep in politics because my lone voice doesn't carry weight unless I'm with a bunch of other people that are saying the same thing as I am. And Ice Cube is not good at mobilizing right now. He's good at mobilizing when it comes to rappers. He's even decent at it when it comes to the three ball league. I'm surprised that thing is still up and running. So it deserves props for that. But that doesn't
the three ball league. Put some respect on the big three, Chris.
The big three.
Put some respect on Coach Nancy Lieberman Klein's name, Chris.
All that stuff is private sector work.
Yeah.
Private sector does not operate like the public sector. And that's the one thing that a lot of businessmen have the hardest time understanding. That's why Donald Trump is doing such a horrible job as president, because he thought he was going to be able to take his public sector practices and that they would just magically translate to the private sector, and they don't. And that's why he has, you know, all these people hating him and stuff like that. Because you can't operate in the private sector like you do in the public sector.
And what Chris said right there, Marcus, is a good transition, because I think we're going to make a sandwich this week. We're going to make a topic sandwich with politics being the bread, and in the middle we're going to have some Laker talk. And you know, Chris said that athletes or these, you know, entertainers or whatever need to either stay in their lane or educate themselves and find out, you know, how they can be beneficial to progress. And you could argue, Marcus, that one of the best at doing that right now is one King LeBron James. LeBron James.
Finals MVP LeBron James.
Yes, Finals MVP LeBron James. So let's talk about these Lakers here for a second. And yes, the Lakers defeated the scrappy Miami Heat in six games. You know, they thought they were going to do it in five. They thought they was going to get that gentleman sweep, Marcus. They even brought out the Kobe Black Mamba jerseys, and that they couldn't get it done because Jimmy Butler had something for them boys. But the Lakers got it done in six. The Lakers as an organization now have 17 titles. LeBron as an individual now has four titles, along with four finals MVPs. So what did you make of the series? And I guess maybe even, you know, not just the micro, but the macro as well, the bubble season and how much of a success it was for the NBA.
The bubble season overall was a huge success, and a lot of the credit goes to not just Adam Silver, but the players who actually had to sacrifice and leave home and stay committed to the rules, stay on course, and actually see through this whole process without one positive test like that. You know, there was all this talk about, oh, Florida, you know, going to Florida in the middle of July while cases were soaring. And, you know, I figured as long as no one left the bubble, they would be in good case, because that's the whole point. You're testing people. You're making sure that when they are on campus, they're wearing masks, they're keeping their distance just in case. And it worked out. So in terms of the actual basketball, I thought the longer the season got, the more the lack of fans became noticeable and an issue. The regular season portion of the bubble, I think people were just, you know, happy to see basketball again. But by the time the finals got around, it definitely did not feel like the NBA finals in terms of atmosphere.
Right.
And I, you know, that was probably one of the reasons why the ratings were what they were, along with the fact that, you know, you're competing with so many other sports at this time. Plus whatever small percentage of people that tuned out because of, you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, the whole social justice component of it. But Kamie, as a fellow Laker fan, I don't feel like this title has an asterisk by it. And I'm glad that wasn't a topic of conversation after they won. But what were your thoughts?
Pretty much what you're saying. Like LeBron James, I spent the greater part of since 2004 till when not liking LeBron James. Not I just always respected the man's game. He was never going to get any props from me until he won a title with the Lakers. I used to say until he comes to the Western Conference, but even if he would have came to the Western Conference, I still wouldn't have respected him.
I mean, to be fair to the listeners that may not have heard Chris before, Chris is the forever mayor of the governor of Kobe stand. So Chris has some biases here, ladies and gentlemen, against one LeBron James that he is just now finally overcoming.
But when I've been shocked. But since 2016, I knew he was going to be coming to the Lakers. I've been on Facebook. I was tweeting about him coming to the Lakers way back in the day. So when he came to the Lakers, the city, it took a while for them to get on board with him. Of course, him trolling the Lakers fans and saying he was going to be at Blaze Pizza. And
oh man, I sent my poor interns out to cover that story, and they were waiting and waiting all day for LeBron to show up.
LeBron is gonna
so hot,
so yeah. I wasn't mad at that. But then last season was a bust, but this season the Lakers were back to true form, and I just felt that LeBron was the perfect person to lead us back to the promised land, especially with his storied friendship with Kobe Bryant, the social justice work that he stands for, the footprint in the entertainment landscape that he has. Mm-hmm. I just think he's at this time, at this stage in his career, is the perfect ambassador for the NBA. There's this show that I watch on YouTube about NBA players and the ones LeBron James spends a ridiculous amount of money on his body, keeping himself in shape.
$1 million.
Yeah, it's insane. and this dude is worth every penny that the Lakers are paying him. He is officially a Laker great now. That's not even a debate. He is. If Gail Goodrich has his jersey retired in Staples Center, LeBron James is getting his jersey retired. The question now slander. Is...
So I'll say it, Chris with the Gail Goodrich shade.
I love Gail Goodrich, but I'm just saying, man. Come on. But this next year, LeBron is playing for a statue in front of Staples. I think he should get one now, but the way our fandom is, I think two would be required for him to get that statue. And then if he three-peats, then I do think that we're going to have to start having that that Michael Jordan talk. I don't think really fair to do that right now because Michael Jordan does still have six and undefeated in the finals. But if LeBron James is able to pull something like a three-peat off at this stage in his career, there's a way, because at this stage in Michael Jordan's career, he wasn't doing this. He might have been retired already or just now starting with the Wizards. So
a couple things. Jordan was out the league.
Yeah, well, a couple things here, Marcus. First, on the LeBron as a true Laker, quote unquote, point. Maybe I'm seeing it differently as a non-Lakers fan than you two as Lakers fans. But to me, like, it felt like, yeah, y'all was happy to have LeBron, because who wouldn't be happy to have LeBron? But it felt like LeBron didn't truly become, quote unquote, family until the passing of Kobe and the way that he kind of took over and shepherded that team through that. But also, to Chris's point about Jordan, I've always looked at it like Montana and Brady, right? Like, you can have an argument for either one, but to me, Montana will always be better just because of the perfection and on the biggest stage. But you can make the argument that Tom Brady is right there or even greater. And I think that's how it is with LeBron and MJ. Like, MJ has that perfection, but if you look at, like, the length and breadth of what LeBron has done, you know, was it 10 finals? When you look at just always being there and in some cases, like, dragging teams that had no business in the finals to the finals. Like, I think you can make a case for LeBron, but ultimately I feel like nostalgia and also that perfect record is going to keep Mike on top unless LeBron goes crazy and wins, like, 4 or 5 more titles on the way out.
Yeah, I think I wish people would just sort of enjoy the ride and we can have that conversation when he retires and we can actually compare, you know, titles and stuff. I do think he is going to, no matter what, be number two at the very worst.
Yeah, at worst, yeah.
At worst. And, you know, maybe he gets to the point where he's 1B to Jordan's 1A, depending on sort of what is your cup of tea. I think what is going to help LeBron is obviously the longevity factor.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to finish, barring injury, first in points. He's going to pass Kareem at some point.
Which is crazy to think about.
I mean, and he's going to finish second in assists at this rate if he continues this. He's not going to catch John Stockton, but he will finish second in assists. And we've never seen someone come close to first all-time in points, second all-time in assists like that. Mm-hmm. That right there should, you know, open the door to having a conversation about, you know, comparing the two. But when you compare the off-the-court stuff with LeBron and just the social pulse he has on what's going on, Jordan never had that. And
no.
You know, you could argue Jordan's impact was felt more within the game in terms of elevating the NBA to become an international powerhouse that it is.
Like, the Dream Team is still one of the most important moments in the history of that sport in terms of the globalization of basketball.
Yeah. I mean, just Jordan's sneakers. I mean, Jordan's sneakers are still relevant in 2020. Like, the fact that he's able to still do that long retired says something. So his impact was felt different than LeBron's impact, which, as we've seen during this election cycle, like, the things he's doing with More Than a Vote, and just sort of using his voice, like, that's something that we haven't probably seen since Ali in terms of balancing the overall, you know, talent as an athlete with just sort of the social component.
Yeah, like, he's somebody who, and I guess it's fitting, Chris, that he is a Laker now, because if you look at LeBron on and off the court, I feel like as a player, he's like the best, like an even better version of Magic Johnson. Like, he gives you what Magic gave you, but in a bigger, stronger, faster body. So, like, LeBron is like the, like, whatever you thought Magic Johnson was, like, obviously one of the greatest players of all time, like, put that inside the body of a machine. Like, that's who LeBron is as a player. But then off the court, I feel like LeBron, you know, you mentioned Ali, Marcus. I feel like you could make a comparison to Kareem and what Kareem did with, you know, his off the court type of activism. And so it's like, obviously, the three of us, the age that we are, Michael Jordan is in a position where he probably won't get knocked out of that top spot. But for everybody that wants to nitpick about LeBron James, it's like, nah, like, obviously, dude is at worst the second or third best player in the history of the game. And also this force off the court, you know, even we're seeing now with the voting and stuff like that. So you can't knock the king.
No.
Nah, you can't knock him at all. And LeBron James, one of the things that I'll always respect about him, and I think he got this from Magic Johnson, is he learn how to make himself relevant in the political arena. You know what I'm saying? And it just, it shows you that, not to go too deep back into the Ice Cube discussion, but it shows you, you know, like Ice Cube and LeBron James. When I look at LeBron James, it's LeBron James is a person that's willing to learn and talk to the right people about how to better communities. Ice Cube kind of wants to handle this like the way he probably handled Jerry Heller that Straight Outta Compton movie. And politics just does not work like that. You know, maybe the record industry does, politics does not. Yeah. And LeBron James is learning.
And we also see Marcus office one day. Yeah, I do think we will see like that down the road. But also, speaking about using your power, Marcus, LeBron James was really one of the first to kind of, along with Rich Paul, to kind of spearhead this player empowerment movement that we're currently in, where the athletes on the court have just as much power as some of these people in the boardrooms in terms of, you know, where are we going to play and changing the landscape of the balance of power in the league.
Yeah, I think the decision will always go down as a negative towards LeBron by most people, but what he did by, you know, going to the Heat, that should, you know, counterbalance the actual 1 hour television show, because that was the start of players starting to realize their worth and their power and control and, you know, trying to set the narrative as opposed to letting teams sort of decide, you know, where guys are going to go.
Go ahead, Chris.
I wasn't a fan of the decision when it happened, but when they lost to the Mavericks that year, he came into the next season like way more humble, grounded than he was that first year. He understood when he put that Heat team together that getting to the finals and winning championships is not something that's just promised. So he did the work to get where he's at, man. So
well, in that first year, also, like, he was playing a role. Like, he was the villain. Like, he was like, you want me to be the bad guy, then I'll be the bad guy. But that's not who LeBron is, right? Like, he's not Draymond Green. He's not, you know, somebody who relishes being the antagonist, you know? And so we did see LeBron learn how to become a champion and learn how to become a leader through those teams with D-Wade and Chris Bosh. But the other thing, Marcus, that I want to touch on the Lakers real quick before we move to that other team in L.A. for a little bit, is when you look at this team, when you look at LeBron, when you look at AD, like, you can make the argument – this isn't the year they were supposed to win, given the surrounding cast and given the limitations of what they could do within the salary cap. So, yes, granted, you know, the Clippers will be back next year with a new coach with Ty Lue. The Rockets, whatever they do with the Daryl Morey situation, like, the Rockets will be back in some way, shape, or form. The Golden State Warriors, don't call it a comeback. They'll be back next season. You got these young squads that we saw, like the Nuggets or the Trailblazers or the Suns or the Utah Jazz, that are going to be nipping at some of these other teams' heels in the West. So, reasonably, what do you expect from the Lakers next season?
You know, to your point, that's why the joke online was, you know, these are the We Believe Lakers, because no one believed in the Lakers despite having LeBron and AD for a minute. Everything was like Clippers. Everything was all Clippers are going to win the chip. And then Lakers lost game one against Portland, and, you know, people were freaking out and trying to anoint, you know, Portland as the greatest eight seed ever. And then you know how that ended up. So I think it depends on how they handle free agency this year. You know, they signed a bunch of guys to, you know, one-year deals. It sounds like, you know, or one and one. So the players have options to opt out. It sounds like Rondo might opt out and try to get more money either with the Lakers or elsewhere. So KCP is another guy who is expected to opt out. It depends how many of those guys decide to.
AD's going to opt out, but he's going to re-sign.
He's going to resign to his money. I think there are probably one or two guys from this year's roster. They should probably try to keep, Rondo being one of them.
Yeah.
KCP really stepped up in the finals, but I think he is someone, if you have Avery Bradley coming back, you could probably let KCP go. But, you know, they have limited money. They'll have to be smart about who they sign. I would love to see them sign Boogie Cousins again and see how that goes for a second time. See if he can actually get on the court, because if he's someone, if you're looking at JaVale or Boogie Cousins, I would roll the dice on Boogie and bring the White back and have, you know, Boogie as his possible, you know, X factor. So I think they'll definitely be contenders in the West. I am not sold on the Clippers at all. I think if you thought this playoffs was bad, I think it could get even worse next year in terms of the Kawhi, not so much the Kawhi Paul George dynamic, but there's a lot of pressure because those guys can walk after next season. And if the Clippers don't get it done next season, if you're either one of those guys, why would you want to stay? Like, you're not getting any younger. Yeah. You have a roster that on paper looked great, but there are definitely some flaws on that team. So I can see one or both guys leaving. And at that point, you know, the West is wide open besides the Lakers. So I expect there'll be a one seed or a two seed again next year.
What about you, Chris? What do you think about your Lakers? How many of these dudes will they retain? Will Quinn Cook get left off the bus again like he did after the championship game? Who's coming back, dog?
I think I can see Dwight Howard going to the Warriors, but I think he'll stay. I think the team pretty much stay intact. I can see KCP leaving. I can see Rondo. I can see him going either way either. I think as long as you keep AD and LeBron James and put some good pieces around them, the Lakers are going to win again.
I feel like they need – I hear what you're saying, Chris, but I feel like they need to at least get one more shooter, like a consistent quality outside shooter to expand the court a bit. Like that's the – I feel like they need one more piece to keep pace, because you're right. With LeBron and AD, you got an amazing 1-2 punch. I just feel like we need a consistent outside threat, and that's the one. And it's not Danny Green, unfortunately. Like, that's the one piece I think they're missing for next season.
And they'll find something. I mean, this is the rule about the Lakers. We don't just win one title. It's never one and done with us. We win twice. Sometimes we win three.
He's right, though. I mean, what? You're right. I mean, there's a wave there that they go in.
Yeah.
I think part of it is, like, if you're one of these middle of the pack type of dudes, like if you're somebody like if we was playing NBA 2K, Marcus, like you're not getting 99 dudes, you're not getting 95 dudes, but if you're a dude that's like a 75 to an 84, like those kind of veteran dudes, been in the league 4 or 5 seasons, like those are the guys that would want to sign with the Lakers for a 1 or 2 year deal, because you have the opportunity to win a championship and multiple championships now.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the Clippers are concerned, I'm not one of the Laker fans that hate the Clippers. I like the Clippers. I just don't like them better than the Lakers. I like the Clippers fine. I like the Angels fine. I like the Ducks okay. I don't like them better than the – I even like Chivas USA when they were here for a cup of coffee. I thought they were okay. But I don't like them better than the main Los Angeles teams. But the problem with the Los Angeles Clippers is not just that they're not the Lakers, is they are an embarrassment to the city. And I really do think it says
tell them why you mad, son.
I'm just saying, I think it says something about you personally. If you come from Los Angeles and you're a Marcellus Wiley type who is just advanced degrees all over the place, went to Columbia, smart dude, and your favorite team, Los Angeles, and your favorite team is the Clippers. Like,
wow, wow, Chris Ealy going after that dude.
Man, I'm just saying, man, it makes no sense to me. It's like, you know. It just makes no sense to me.
You saying this now, Chris, but just you wait until the Clippers got their own building. Then it's going to be a whole different story. Clip City, Chip City.
I hope that means something for them. I really do. I hope when they get their own building, when they go to Inglewood, I hope that it means they will stop. See, this is the thing. Getting past the second round of the playoffs is like winning the championship to the Clippers. Winning the championship to the Lakers is like winning the championship to the Lakers. That the only thing we'll settle for. The Clippers do not belong in the conversation with the Lakers ever. This year proved it. You can say coulda, shoulda, woulda. You could have been like, oh, if the Clippers played the Lakers, then it would have been the same story because they're fucking garbage. They're the Clippers. And they gotta work on not being garbage. I don't even know if changing the name is gonna do anything for those dudes, because when they were the Buffalo Braves, they were still garbage. Mm. When they were in San Diego, they were garbage. In Los Angeles, they're garbage. When they moved to Inglewood, they're garbage. It's something wrong. Something is not right there. They could leave the city if they want to. I heard they go down in value a lot, but they could leave the city. But they got that Bruce Lee curse. Something is going on there.
I'm going to tell you, look, Marcus, I'm going to tell you when the Clippers weren't garbage on Tecmo NBA with Bo Kimble in that backcourt. The Clippers was a problem on that Tecmo NBA.
Danny Manning.
Yes, Danny Manning. Doc Rivers as a player.
Doc Rivers. Glenn Rivers, yes.
Glenn Rivers, yes. So let's finish the sandwich, Marcus, and end up back where we started. I think we might start doing this since we are getting to the point where we are mere weeks away from the official election, even though I've already voted early. What are your thoughts on this election, Marcus? Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or realistic about what might happen come November 3rd?
I am optimistic that Trump is going to get blown out in this election. I've said from the jump, the man doesn't want the job. Mm. And while he probably didn't want the job in 2016, he now has 4 years. He has a body of work that illustrates or that at least the people can look over and say, you know what, maybe this hasn't worked out for the best. Mm. And he's done nothing during this election cycle that has convinced me otherwise that he actually wants to be reelected. If anything, he's going out of his way to just, you know, say the most absurd things. And yeah, he's out of base. I get that. But his base is not as big as it was in 2016. I can tell you that. So with his core shrinking on top of the fact, look, there are people who probably didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a woman, flat out. And having, you know, a white male and Joe Biden sort of neutralizes some of that. The lack of votes that Clinton didn't get in 2016. So I guess the question will be, will Biden win by enough where Trump is able to somewhat stomach the results and therefore not become a bitter headache between now and, you know, and January, that dead period.
Mm. What about you, Chris? Because as you mentioned, you've been working in this arena for 20 years. Now, like this is how crazy 2020 is, Marcus Vandenberg. Chris out here with the Democrats, but he working with the Lincoln Project right now. You know what I'm saying? Strange. Like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's what Chris Ealy is about right now, Marcus. So, Chris, are you optimistic, pessimistic, or realistic about what's going to happen on November 3rd?
optimistic. I think a lot of Democrats have PTSD from what happened in 2016. And that was not my attitude at all when 2016 happened. It was like, okay, I got to look at the right forecast. I have to make sure I'm talking to the right people, talking to the right constituency. And I think that the Democrats have learned their lesson from 2020. I don't think they're doing everything, but I think Donald Trump is doing a lot of things bad that are going to play in favor of the Democrats. And then when Joe Biden does win, I'll be able to kind of take a little bit of time off of politics, because I'm kind of worn out between working with the Women's March and the Lincoln Project and Black Voters Matter and my own like union at the school, AFT, all these different things. I'm definitely had my fill of politics. But when Joe Biden's job starts in January, guess what? We're going to be hitting him over the head and asking him, what is he going to do to make society better as a whole? I'm not like, you know, the contract with Black America, I think it's a good idea. It sounds stupid to me. Just contract with Black America. Just
yeah.
Fuck out of here. You know, but whatever. I've gotten shit from friends for saying that, but it's just, let's seriously talk about realistic things that can be done for the Black community and in the immediate that'll have long-term effects, okay? I don't want to hear this talk about $500 billion worth of reparations. That shit ain't happening. It's good to talk about and fantasize about. It ain't happening, but, you know, it's good to talk about, you know, but we need to be realistic about what's going to happen in the immediate.
Well, speaking of the immediate, Chris, one last question for you on this political topic, if you will. You know, Marcus and I feel like we've adopted a politician over the last month, and that would be the man that I affectionately call Senator Tony Gwynn. And that's our man from South Carolina, Jamie Harrison, out here looking like a young Tony Gwynn on these streets. Can Jamie Harrison pull an upset and get Lindsey Graham out the paint, Chris? Can he do it?
Okay, so the Lincoln Project, so give you a little bit of stuff that I know. The Lincoln Project is spending a ton of money on Jamie Harrison in South Carolina. Of all the Republican senators who are up for re-election that have the potential to lose in 2020, Jamie Harrison is somebody that the Lincoln Project thinks has a very good shot of winning. And I think what a lot of people, once somebody that I talked to from the Lincoln Project told me that they're hoping that Jamie Harrison running for office will have a trickle-up effect, meaning that if Jamie Harrison wins, it'll get the people that vote for him to vote top ticket for Donald Trump and hopefully snag South Carolina. I think what's going to really... to piggyback off of what Marcus said, what's going to really set it off for Democrats is us taking at least one state that we have no business North Carolina, a state like that, not even North Carolina, because North Carolina could go either way, but we need a state that we do not have any business winning on any planet, to kind of just put whatever controversy or conspiracy theory Donald Trump is going to throw out there under the bed, you know, and just put it away, move into 2020 with positive vibes. Rachel Bitticoffer, a political forecaster, and Alan Lichtman, my favorite political forecasters, are saying Joe Biden is going to win. They didn't say that in 2016. So it's given me the confidence moving into 2020.
You know the craziest thing I saw this week, Marcus, because they were talking about what was going on in South Carolina, and like they were interviewing people on the street, you know, in terms of what's going on with Lindsey Graham and Jamie Harrison out here. And you actually had people that said they were going to vote for Donald Trump that said they was going to vote for Jamie Harrison. The rare Trump Harrison voter.
How does that work?
Like, like I don't get it. I don't understand it. But whatever Jamie needs to go across that finish line, because I think that would, other than Biden winning, like that would be the result that would make me the most happy on election night if we elected, or South Carolina elected, Tony Gwynn to the Senate.
Yeah, I don't see McConnell losing, sadly. So
yeah. And I think the Lincoln Project giving up on Amy McGrath winning in Kentucky as well.
Yeah.
So, but I will say this also, though. Trump is able to steal himself re-election in 2020. If Democrats hold on to Congress and take the Senate, he's going to get impeached. So it's very, very important that you're voting up and down the ticket this year, probably more so than any other year, right? Mm. The Democrats are not going to come out and say they're going to pack the Supreme Court if they get the Senate. But if they push in this lady who's up for the Supreme Court seat, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat, if they push her through, I promise you, they're packing the Supreme Court. That's going to happen. It's just going to happen because too many minorities and people of that Asian are going to demand that out of Joe Biden. Biden is going to be a president that we're going to be able to get a lot. I do think he'll be kind of a Lyndon B. Johnson part two. Lyndon B. Johnson wasn't the most on the planet, but Black people had his ear. And I think that's going to happen with Joe Biden as well.
Mm. So, like Marcus and Chris are feeling optimistic. I think I'm optimistic too, maybe a little bit less than Marcus and Chris, but I still feel like Uncle Joe got this. But let's wrap this episode up, fellas. Because I know Trump is about to come on the West Coast, Marcus, so you can catch what you missed the first time around. That's a special treat for anybody watching the video version. Before we get out of here, Chris, where can people find you? What you got going on? Let them know about the podcast.
All right, so KM Easy Does It is where you can find me. Real Power Dynamics, just do a Google search. I'm talking to a branding consultant right now, so I'm going to start putting out new episodes soon. It's just right now I have a lot on my plate. I'm working on my dissertation at the moment, so that's just kind of where my mind is.
You getting the branding officer to make you less threatening for these white listeners out here, Chris?
I hope so, man. Dang, I hope so.
Like, why is he so angry? definitely check out what Chris got going on. And again, like Real Power Dynamics. Marcus and I both have been on that show, correct?
Yeah, both of you have been on the show. Yep. We're going to, I'm trying to move more into that space, but I'm working on so many different projects right now. So I got to kind of see where I fit in this thing at the moment.
Good stuff, brother. Marcus, what you got going on? Anything popping over at Yahoo? And let the people know where they can follow you.
You can follow me at Marco Will. MarcoWill. If you have not listened to Review Away from a couple weeks ago featuring KME and Nate, please do. If you're a Patreon subscriber of Post Wrestling,
yes,
it was probably one of the most entertaining podcasts I've listened to this year. Going over Slam Jam also, Volume 1.
I was going to say, if you're a Patreon follower of us, because Away graciously allowed us to drop the episode on our feed. So yeah, it's myself, Chris from LA, and Wei Ting from Post Wrestling. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, we reviewed WCW Slam Jam Volume 1 because Chris out here just picking random reviews, and that's what he picked this time around.
Yeah. That was good. I don't like people have been inboxing me. What is the next CD you're gonna? I don't think it's ever gonna be as good as that WCW CD. You know, so we'll see. You know, we'll see, man. But that album was just so much fun to review and talk about.
Yeah, to me, the only album that would even come close, and I don't even think it's as good as Slam Jam, Marcus, would be to review the Ruthless album from the WWF, where you got...
Oh, that's just a pile driver.
Yeah, well, pile driver, that's a good one, too, but I'm thinking, like, C. Murder rapping about Vince McMahon. Like, that's what the world needed.
About Stone Cold,
yep.
And rapping about The Rock, yeah.
So yeah, that's where you can find Marcus and Chris. You can find me on Twitter at @N8 MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter, Facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport, Patreon, as we mentioned, Patreon.com/ The Kings of Sport. I think that's it. Check out Chris's review, like Marcus said. If you hadn't listened to that review, check it out from Chris and Wei and myself. New Rocky Maivia picture show will be up next week. Main event, Black Lightning podcast, all that other stuff. Just follow me on Twitter at @N8 MOZAIK. So, yeah, fellas, that is going to do it. We got through another episode. Talk some politics. We talked about your Lakers and, yeah, we'll be back next week with what might be an interesting show, depending on what goes down in this NLCS. Marcus and I might be on shaky ground next week.
Yeah, it's currently 1-1. So we'll see, Nate.
Yes, we will see. So I'm still feeling good about the series, even though yesterday was yeah. I don't know where that came from, but. Fortunately, we had two wins in the bank, but yeah, yesterday was not a good sign.
No,
so we'll see. Cause yeah, I do like this Braves team. It's a good mix. It's a good mix. Like you got your man Freddie Freeman out here on these streets, and then you got Acuna and Albies out here, Dansby, Ozuna.
Ozuna. Yeah.
They're a fun team. Like they're not your father's Braves with Brian McCann and them.
Oh God, no.
yeah, that's gonna do it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for checking out the program. We'll be back next week with an all new episode of the world's most dangerous podcast, The Kings of Sport Podcast. Thanks again to Chris for hopping on with us.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Chris out here. Out here, we're working with the Lincoln Project. We might have to talk about that more in depth on the next time we do 2020, Chris, because I think that'd be an interesting conversation that the people would like to hear.
Oh yeah, no doubt, man. I don't mind doing that.
Because the Lincoln Project, like they must have learned at the feet of Marcus Vandenberg, because they putting out some of the pettiest political commercials I've never seen in my life.
Well, okay. Yeah, they're petty. So before we sign off, that is why. I'm working with them is because of that. They had a clear message that I understand. I don't understand a 5,000 page contract with Black America when the world is just fucking up all over the place. I understand petty. and I don't understand how to work and converse with that.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll definitely have to talk about that down the road on 2020, Chris. But yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you're watching on the video version, and we'll be back next time with an all new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, The Kings of Sport Podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Chris from LA, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. You know, I just want to say, everybody, you know, this was all about respect. You know. I think Marcus needs his respect. Chris needs his respect. You know, the listeners need their respect, and I need my damn respect too. LeBron the best, man. How can you hate LeBron, Jermaine? I'm putting your name out here again, Jermaine.
he hates LeBron?
Yeah, Jermaine hates LeBron and Roman Reigns. Right, I don't know why. I don't know why we friends, Jermaine, but we are. We family. Because you've been down with the king.
What in the wide world of sports is going on here?
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat, because that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!